Shall we begin?
You're in green.
I'm on green, yes.
Perfect.
Okay. Hello, everybody. My name is Georgios Gousios. I'm head of research at Endor Labs and a part-time associate professor at the Delft University of Technology in a nearby country here. Let me say a few things about myself, since it's customary here to introduce the speaker. I have been on this particular field of SBOMs and dependency analysis and so on as a researcher since 2015, more or less. So I have seen all the failures coming up, in real time, like LeftPad, then SolarWinds, and then so on. In 2020, we had organized the dependency management room, which was a precursor, or perhaps it was slightly conflicting with this particular room, where we introduced the Fasten project, which was one of the first projects that basically did reachability-based analysis of SBOMs and software dependencies. This project, one thing led to another, and this project basically became a startup, perhaps now it's a scale-up, we can call it, which is called Endor Labs. It is based in the Bay Area, and we are basically providing solutions in the space of software composition analysis, plus plus. Okay, we will see what the plus plus is today. By describing my history so far, you might have understood that I'm of a certain age. And parts of this being of a certain age is that I have a teenage daughter that actually is into pop music. And lately, she came up actually with this song, which I really, really like, because it describes the problem that I'm going to talk about in almost in excruciating detail, I would say. Let's read a bit the lyrics. So, like ships in the night, you keep passing me by, just wasting time, trying to prove who's right. And if it all goes crashing into the sea, it's just you and me trying to find the light. What are the ships? Any guesses? Let me help a bit. There are two ships. One is the package manager, where the developer declares their intended dependencies. And the other ship is the compiler and or the runtime of the language, depending on whether you're using Python or C or so on, which has its own view of dependencies.
Yep.
Right? Which ship is right?
Both.
Who says both?
I did.
Let's see. Okay. One vote for both, but
depends.
Who? It depends. Okay. All right. Who says, you know, that the compiler is right, is always right? Yes.
Ground truth.
Is it ground truth, though?
They're both wrong all the time.
The compiler is ground truth. I mean, it can be ground truth, but what about when you load code dynamically?
It's runtime.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, that's the issue, yeah.
So fantastic. Yes, exactly. Yes, this is where I was trying to get to. Thanks.
Maybe you
have to repeat. Okay. I mean, it will come through the presentation. All right. So, traditional dependency management and software composition analysis works. I mean, we're in the SBOM room. I guess everybody knows how it works, right? So we start a new project. We create a package manager manifest, requirements .txt, POM XML, whatnot. Gradle, whatever tool we're using. The build system and the package manager, when we're trying to build, it downloads stuff from the internet. Side parenthesis here, how can we trust our data on just random stuff we download from the internet? That's a different question, close parenthesis. The package manager copies all the files in a directory, and then the compiler starts using those dependencies in order to compile or run the project, right? This is what we know. But if we think a bit, from a higher level point of view, we get more or less to this. So the developer declares their intent, in a manifest file. So that's the requirements.txt file. A package manager does the dependency resolution. We get the dependencies onto our system. We have a compiler. Now, the developer themselves also write source code, right? And the source code might or might be using some of the dependencies, might be declaring dependencies that they are not using, might be actually depending on dependencies that are transitive that other dependencies bring in. All right? All those nice things that make software composition analysis in the way that most of the tools are doing this at this point, well, I wouldn't say wrong, but perhaps incomplete. Okay. The output is always a program, and the program is the source of truth of everything. So what I want to advocate here is that when we're doing software composition analysis, there is a lot of stuff that we don't really identify. Can you guess where this stuff comes from?
OS.
So I, for example, I write a Python program, and I have some kind of package that I have installed through apt-get. What else? I copy and code into my repository. That's a dependency, right? But I don't maintain it somehow. What else?
All of those fancy shift left dev tools.
Shift left dev tools. OK, so how?
Right, they're pulling things in.
Okay, yes, and there are some tools that are indeed pulling in, Bazel, for example, but Bazel also depends on the version that you provide to it. How else can I have, let's say, dependencies on code on my program? Yes?
Runtime library from your compiler.
Fantastic, yes. Libc is a dependency. Okay, this gets installed, for example, from the operating system. But sometimes when you, for example, do some kind of JNI call through Java, you depend on libc. Okay. Various ways. So things also tend to become out of sync. So developers import new dependencies. The dependencies are in the environment. In some cases, dependencies can be declared in a testing scope, but we're still using them into production for misconfiguration reasons or for any other reason. And in some cases, dependencies are removed from the code, but not from the package manifest. So we have an extra dependency that we somehow need to maintain, but no, we're not using it, so it's basically redundant. And then we have Python. This is the average Python repository, especially if you are dealing with machine learning and AI stuff. You have a requirements.txt file or a poetry file. And then you have a list of instructions that looks like this, that tells you, please install TensorFlow at this version. Please install NumPy at this version, but with this patch for this particular GPU, because otherwise the thing is going to be dog slow. Okay, so how can we actually maintain this? How can we discover first those dependencies? How can we maintain this? Let's take a look, actually, at this particular project. So this is from OpenAI. It's called Baseline. It's pretty old. As you can see from the version, from the timestamps over there. But still, it has exactly this problem, right? So it tells you to create a virtual environment, and then it tells you that you need to install TensorFlow between 1.4 or 1.15 by hand. It's not part of the requirements.txt file for some reason. Using our tooling, I have run an initial scan of this project without considering what I call phantom dependencies. All right? What you see here is more or less the same thing that most SCA tools would give you. It's all the files that are in requirements.txt plus their transitive dependencies. Okay, so we have some direct dependencies and then we have some transitive dependencies over here. That's it. Is that it, though? Well, we will see at the end of this presentation, but first I will need to run a full scan of the project. So by also enabling phantom dependencies, I will have running in the background.
Can you increase the font?
Yes. I mean, the idea here is not to see this. But what I want to show is basically that the thing actually works. So it's not vaporware, right? So what are phantom dependencies? Basically, phantom dependencies is the thing that we have discussed. It is dependencies that are provided by the system and are assumed to be working, basically, to be available somehow in the runtime of the project. Can come from various locations, some of which we have already described. And if you think this is just a problem with Python, it's not just a problem with Python. It's a problem with NPM as well, with Java, with if you have plugins with even with native environments. All right? We discussed this. As I said, what I consider the ships in the night, according to the original talk, is basically the two things, the package manager and the compiler and the runtime view. The package manager usually sees way more dependencies than the actual runtime or the compiler uses, because there are a lot of transitive dependencies for which we don't have any reachability paths to them. So when we start from the client, there is no path, calling path, from the client into the actual transitive dependency. So usually what we have found also in the company is that from all the source code that is being imported into a repository, which is around 80% of the code that on an average repository is imported, around 15 to 30% is actually being used. So there is a lot of code that we import. It perhaps forms an attack surface that's never been used. It would be very nice to clean this up. Yes. Yes. How? Yes. Yeah, one way to do that is with reachability, but that's not my talk. That's another talk. Okay. So how can we identify phantom dependencies and do this type of cleanup? We need to do program analysis. Any idea what program analysis is? Yes, some people might have seen that. It is? No, it's not parsing. It's not parsing. Parsing is like one component of program analysis, the first step in the whole program analysis chain. So, sorry?
Can I disagree with your first bullet? The source of truth is the source code?
Yes, it is not.
So you could have never been part of an obfuscated C programming project, or the hideous thing people do in JavaScript to pull in dynamic code, or anything written in Lisp where code and data are the same. And so I love the optimism of being able to look at the source code and understand what the dependency graph is, but it's actually the binary.
Could be true, yes, for languages that have binaries, but for languages that have source code that are source code executable, the source code is the truth. Right?
Okay.
No?
Evaluate the nature of source code and data, especially as we move into data. And like if you think about when we're talking about why are we doing the program analysis, we're trying to understand what we're bringing into the mess. So I'll stop now and
yeah. Yes. I agree and disagree. We need to start with program analysis, and program analysis starts necessarily on the source code. So yeah, perhaps this formulation here is not precise, but it is something we can work on, hopefully. So why do we need proper program analysis? I mean, somebody could say, well, yes. If I track all the imports in my Python code, it will be easy to identify all the libraries, right? So it's easy. I'm just going to write a Perl script or Python script those days to, you know, take the imports and try to, find what libraries have those imports. This is the perhaps hopefully comprehensive way of doing importing in Python. You can import a module, a function from a module, all functions in a module, an alias a module to a different name, a package, a static import, a relative import in the source code, using the import lib, in which case you can also rename the import lib, and so you can alias basically the import lib, and then you need to de-alias it in order to be able to track this, and you can even basically do an eval, an import code. Good luck doing that with a Python script, right? So we need...
All these may be inside if.
Exactly. That's my next point. Exactly. All those things can be, you know, in a conditional statement. Like you can have a try import foo, otherwise import bar, or you can do an if, a condition on some variable, and then import the custom library. Those are the reasons for why we need a proper program analysis to do that. Okay. So the steps that we have taken to solve this problem. First of all, we need to start with the source code. Okay. We start, let's say, with the client code. And for each file in the client code, we follow all the imports. How can we follow all the imports? We first need to have analyzed the program, the client code, and the virtual environment, and the site packages that in the that come with the operating system, and basically all locations from which Python can tell you where it can find code. So if you open the Python interpreter and you configure it with a particular virtual environment, for example, you can ask it, please give me all locations where I can find code for this particular execution. Okay, so we start with that. After having analyzed and mapped everything, we can start then from the client code and do case-by-case import analysis. So I import this particular library. I go into the file that is into the module, basically, that creates this particular library, look at it, at its imports, and go, let's say, transitively until the whole thing has been exhausted.
This sort of exercise is being done for Ubuntu when they're doing the builds for resolving dependencies.
Mm-hmm.
Do you leverage that code?
No.
Okay, fine. Repeat the question for the audience, sorry.
The question was that this analysis has been done before. Did we reuse the analysis? And the answer was no. Okay, now how to do program analysis in Python. As I said, you need to have resolved, parsed everything to begin with, resolve the types for everything. If you have type information, it's way more precise because you can track basically specific function calls onto types. And then you can also take into account one of the existing static type checkers, like MyPy or PyWrite. We're using PyWrite for that matter, to basically parse the code and do all the resolution. Okay, so it's not extremely hard to do, but you need to be aware that it needs to be done. And I will show you the results, hopefully, of the scan. Yes, the scan has finished just in time. As you can see before, we had 11 dependencies. Now, by doing this random dependency discovery, we have found 51. Right? And according to our findings tooling here, what we can see is that in one of those dependencies, we found an actual vulnerability. It's, of course, in setup tools, so it's not necessarily something that can be actively exploited, but it can be exploited while the package is being installed, right? So what we have found is that there is this vulnerability, and this is a call chain, let's say, that goes from the client source code into the vulnerable code. If I didn't do this kind of analysis, I wouldn't be able to track this or do anything with this. I mean, this would be information that I wouldn't know. Of course, I mean, this is a trivial example that we're using for demos. We have found actual vulnerabilities when running this analysis on clients that I cannot disclose. But this, at least to me, gives an indication of how this random dependency problem can be tracked and solved, hopefully, with program analysis. After that, everybody wins. Developers can know what is vulnerable with their code. They can accurately map and create accurate SBOMs on what their application is consuming. CISOs can be aware that there are vulnerabilities there that otherwise they might not have been aware of, and so on. So everybody wins. That's it. Thank you. Yes, yes. I mean, you go first.
Okay. Great insights on Python, and I'm a Python developer, so I know at least about the majority of these things. But the tricky thing is, I mean, here you are talking to the people who are interested in SBOMs. How do we spread the information? How do we get all the open source communities to know about all these issues? How do we make them publishing their SBOM? This is, your stuff is important, but making all the communities aware of this is more important.
Yes, this is part of why we're giving this talk, so that we make the community. Yes, excuse me. So the question is, how can we make the communities aware of the problems that that I have been describing? And my answer to that is, this is part of this of this effort. So we're trying to make the communities aware that those problems exist. The tooling that I have described, it might sound, let's say, extremely complicated and whatnot, but if you're using, I can actually show you it running. So it is, I have it here. So this is our basically analysis tool. It is closed source at the moment, but it can easily be re-implemented, I think. If you ask me, I can re-implement it in like a couple of days, but perhaps somebody else could re-implement it a bit faster. As you can see, it just goes over transitively over all the code that is available to this particular project. Yes. No, there was a question.
You've answered the question because it said, is this open source?
No, it's not open source, sorry.
To some extent,